All right, folks, we are back on the Flagstaff.com T-Talk podcast brought to you this week by Adidas Canada and all-new Code Chaos footwear. Stefan Tiedorf here, as per usual, with my co-host, Scott McLeod, who's doing some stretching in his home studio. Is that how old you are? You need to stretch to speak into a microphone.
I pretty much do. I played golf for the last few days, which I'm not used to. So, yeah, I need to stretch. How's that?
Yes, we were... You know, we got out together last week. That was nice.
We did.
First time in a while. One of us played better than the other, and you playing better than me. Through the first, like, three, I was ready to talk on the podcast how I beat you for the first time. And that didn't happen. Not even close.
Oh, well. It was a good day and with a good student and somebody who's the number one Canadian amateur. So that was fun. I guess we can talk about that a little bit later and observations during that and how we were comparing some things about his game. But yeah, it was good just to get out. And, it's getting hot these days. So trying to play is, it's a challenge.
Yeah, walking is tough. Shout out to Gold Bond and Vaseline for free ads this week. I believe everyone can understand why, but let's move on to the week that was. To steal something from James Duthie's podcast, we're just going to steal a bunch of stuff this week. Why not?
Sure.
Why not? The Rocket Mortgage Classic just wrapped up. Bryson DeChambeau finally won after all the hype of him hitting the ball 5,000 yards at 300 mile per hour ball speed. He finally won at Detroit, and he's changing golf, Scott. Did you not know?
That's what everybody's claiming as far as hype, but I don't know about breaking the game or anything like that. Obviously, it was pretty impressive how he did it, what he's been doing of late, especially in his last bunch of finishes. I don't know if it's revolutionizing the game like everybody seems to be talking about. Obviously, there's a lot of recency bias that's there, but yeah, you know what? Kudos to him. He did a lot of work. I don't know necessarily if some of his commentary that he had this week was all that popular with everybody, but you know what? You got to give him credit for what he's doing. 69 under for the last four events. If you look back at those last seven events, what's he finished? Second, four, T3rd, T8, T6, and first. So that's pretty darn impressive.
It is. Now I'm going to get into a few things. A, yes, he's hitting it a long way. Sure. Really long way, right? I believe you said prior to us getting on here, the first person to average over 350 across an entire tournament. It's impressive. Totally impressive. I'll give him that. It's not why he won the tournament.
No.
It's very helpful.
Only part of the problem.
Part of the reason. It's not why. He could have done that like every other week and not won. He won because he was number one in putting on top of that. He also won because he's hitting it a mile down there. And anybody that's looking at his approach shots, he broke shot length for the record. Like his approach shots aren't that bad. It's that he was hitting it so close to the green on some holes that shot length thought he was hitting an approach shot, which I guess he kind of was, but I digress. It's the putting combined with the fact that this golf course is designed in a way where if you're not in the fairway, you can run a ball up there anyway and get it on the green and make some putts. So he made a lot of putts. He obviously number one driving. It's playing a huge factor, but it wasn't just the driver. I think the golf course played well to his game. He's hot. He's on fire. Everyone can, no one can dispute that. He's probably the best player in the world right now. Will it last? We don't know, but let's pump the brakes on. He's changing golf. Golf's going to be boring. Watch out for 10 of these people in the near future.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen. I mean, you know what? Just like when Tiger came out, he sort of woke up a lot of people that maybe fitness was pretty important in playing the game. Not everybody's capable of doing what Bryson did. Not everybody wants to. I mean, if you heard the interview with Kevin Kisner and he's saying, hey, well, get some kids or something like this, Bryson's got the time and the ability to do it. He's totally dedicated to what he's trying to do. As you mentioned, it fits a Detroit Country Club. 4-inch rough, spots where you can run it up, as you mentioned. He's close enough that his poor iron game, which if you look at his stats, he's got a pretty poor iron game. His wedge game's not great, but if you're that close, you're going to do okay, but it doesn't matter as long as you're making those putts. And obviously he did make those putts, so you're right. Matt Wolf was still within three of them. It wasn't like, Bryson lapped the field here. This is not really the case, but whether he can maintain it and whether it's applicable when it comes to majors, I think that's a big thing, because really this is a guy who has not finished. He's finished T15 in one major. That's his highest finish, the 2016 US Open. Otherwise, he's basically been a non-factor in major championships. So it'll be interesting to see that this new game or this new style of game for him and how it applies to a major championship. Yeah, it'll be entertaining to watch. We'll leave it at that.
Yeah, his wedge game is awful, I think it's fair to say. Yeah. And Ryan Barath, who we've had on this podcast, works for Golf WRX, had a great article about how Bryson really needs to think again about at least his wedges, and that those should not be a 6-iron length anymore, because he's not that golfer anymore. So he originally did that to help with, you know, distance on top of variance and all sorts of crazy Bryson stuff, but he's not that, you know, he's a different man, he's a different body, everything's different now. So I think, yes, you might see some tweaks in that, you know, over the next while he might change, you know, the way his clubs look. That being said, on top of him, yes, he's driving it super far. He didn't lap the field. He won by three. You mentioned Kevin Kisner. Kevin Kisner might be one of the shorter hitters out on tour. And yes, he average around 300 this week off the tee, but it's a very hard golf course. You hit in the fairway 265, you're probably getting it out to 300. If you look at Brendan Todd, you know, carries about 270, hits at 300 every time just with the roll. And Kiz only lost by five. And remember, Bryson, as I said, was the number one putter out there this week. So, like, I think everyone needs to pump the brakes. I don't think he's breaking golf. I think he's hot. You know, I think this is just classic sports media, and that the hottest player out there is the best player, and let's jump to the worst conclusions. That being said, I don't necessarily agree with you in the major standpoint. I don't think if you're driving it that far and straight that there's any golf course that will hurt you on right now and the rest of the major schedule. That being said, you know, you get to Augusta, there's a reason he struggled there. You can't have a 6-iron length wedge and expect to do well at Augusta. But if your putter's as hot as it is, watch out. Like, I think the odds right now, I think he's the favorite in the first two majors, and then second favorite behind Rory at Augusta. I don't know. I really hoped to get rid of Bryson at some point here, and not because of the golf. It was literally, as you said, the first point you touched on, his comments after, both that guy following him with the camera after a bad shot and protect their brand, were so telling for me. I haven't had many interactions with Bryson in person, you know, other than hearing him with his metal spikes come from a mile away at the Greenbrier. But everybody I've talked to, just no one's really that big of a fan. And I think the brand he was protecting was actually the brand he showed after those comments on Saturday.
Clearly he did, and I don't think he was gaining any fans, whether he cares or not. But, you know, the fact that he's saying it and talking about it and saying about protecting his brand, well, I think, you know, social media basically said it best, and the fact that if you want to protect your brand, then you know what? You do that yourself by acting better, acting responsible, taking responsibility for what you're doing, and realizing that that other person, and granted, he did say, yeah, the guy's doing his job, but he's also got to understand that he's doing his job all the time, and you're in front of the camera. That's the way it is. Yeah, you know what? You can be emotional. You can be heated. You know, lots of other players are, but don't expect for people to turn away while you do that. The bigger the stage, especially for him, he's going to have to realize now that is now as a winner, you know, a prolific winner, let's call it, and the fact that he's won 6 times now in 4 years, but, you know, he's going to be getting a lot more attention. He's going to have more cameras. And I mean, really right now, he's probably lucky because of this current pandemic going on. You don't have as many cameras or things that are happening out there. There's going to be even more in the next little while. So hopefully his PR team gets with him and says, hey, you know what, you better tone this down a little bit, especially when you deal with your sponsors as well. I mean, they obviously want to jump on the back of him and how he's playing and what he's doing. But if he's saying stuff like he's saying, that's not going to help their brand at all.
No. And again, on top of that, the reason why you just won, what was it, 1.8 mil or 1.4 mil? So one point doesn't matter, $1 million, is because there was a camera behind you, right? That's what makes the money, is the fact that You know, it's not the patrons that come to the golf course. That makes them break even on things and silly things and merch. It's the sponsorships and the ad money on TV, which is why watching golf on TV is awful usually as is, because all those ads you have to see, and you only see every three shots from like one guy like Bryson. That's why you're making that much money. So if you don't want that, you just want to protect your brand. If you're really just about the passion of golf, then go play on the Korn Ferry Tour where there won't be a camera around you at all times. Like that was the most frustrating part. I don't think anybody agreed with him. No one was in his corner. And I think at this point he's just getting ricochet after ricochet on social media. Some shade being thrown today by Brooks Koepka. I thought that was hilarious. He didn't reference Bryson directly, but I thought it was funny. Eddie Pepperell has doubled and tripled down against him. He's not making friends out there. Not that I really think he cares, but you know, the U.S. team is going to need him on the Ryder Cup because the U.S. team always seems to find ways to get in their own way. And maybe we have, you know, you throw Bryson in there with Patrick Reed and both of them are being hated, you know, put as much money as I can find on Europe at this point.
Yeah, that's not a great team room at all. I mean, one thing I'll go back to when you talked about the majors there, I went and had a look through a couple of the majors and looked at course conditions, looked at scoring and things like this. And, you know, really looking at it for the majors that were won by long drivers. Dustin Johnson, I'll use him for an example, 2016 U.S. Open, obviously a prolific hitter of the golf ball. He wins at Oakmont at 1 under par, where the rough was 8 inches. Whereas Detroit was a very thin 4 inches, and there's 22 strokes difference in scoring. Granted, Detroit Country Club is not Oakmont as far as the playability and difficulty of the golf course, but that shows you that even the long hitter is not able to tear apart a golf course in a major championship. It makes the field a lot tighter, and as a result of it, you're not going to be in a case where you can really separate yourself. So it's going to still make it tough for him, and if he does not make the adjustments shore up his short game, he's going to have some issues, that's for sure. And he's definitely not going to just dominate.
No, he's not going to walk in and win all three majors. And if anybody wants to, I'll give you 20-1. Come find me. I'll bet you he doesn't win all majors. Actually, you know what? 101. I'll give you 101. Yeah. He's not going to win all three majors.
Yeah, I mean, he is... Yeah, he is the prohibitive favorite right now for those three majors for the year. But, you know, I guess, you know, that's not really about odds makers. It's about just about what people are betting on more than anything.
I agree. Adam Hadwin had a good week. Let's, not forget about our Canadians out there finishing T4. Taylor Pendrith, a former guest in the podcast, got oh so close yet again, finishing third, just two back at the Korn Ferry Tour at TBC Colorado. Another weird one of these Wednesday to Saturday starts, and you and I were on the golf course trying to figure out, why are they doing this? I haven't picked up on it. Did you end up finding anything around that?
No, I didn't. I mean, they've done that a few times, and I can see that when they get in situations like they did in the Bahamas, for an example, when they have back-to-back weeks there and they're trying to, you know, shorten the length of stay that they have down there, or maybe in other cases where they're changing up the TV schedule, which obviously wasn't so much in this case because there wasn't TV coverage as far as I know. But, you know, if they want to give them, you know, their own profile, I guess, on a Saturday for their final round, I could see that, but it was just odd why they did it this week. I'm not sure what the thinking was about that. I'm sure it's out there. If we went and looked, I'm sure there's probably some logic.
Enough.
We're just not that concerned about it, really.
Yeah, I think that is the case. But you touched on a thing that I thought about. They really should do Wednesdays to Saturdays, have your final round on a Saturday, work it in on the Golf Channel or opposite of, you know, whatever tournament's going on. At least you get eyes on the Korn Ferry Tour, and you get the, you know, eyes on guys that will be on the PGA Tour next year. When it's on Sunday, you've already watched, usually, I don't know about you, but myself, is Sunday's the day where I'm going to invest the most time in the golf tournament. Usually Thursdays and Sundays, and I take Friday, Saturday off in between. But Sunday, I'm not going to watch a full schedule of the PGA Tour and then flip over to the Korn Ferry Tour on top of that very often. And then when the real season's going on, the LPGA is going on. And so, like, mix it up. Yep. Do a Wednesday, Saturday, and maybe even find ways to get some Mackenzie Tour stuff. And maybe you do that, you know, Tuesday to Friday. Like, you know, mix it up so you can get more eyes on your game.
Yeah, I like that. And, you know, they've done that a few times with some of the LPGA events as well and shifted them earlier in their week as far as the finishes. I get it for the PGA Tour as far as the Sunday and especially for spectators. But, you know, for LPGA, Korn Ferry Tour, they don't have as many live spectators. LPGA would obviously have more, but Korn Ferry Tour, I mean, they're not really, you know, catering to that crowd as far as the walk-up crowd. So get the TV crowd as much as you can. Don't conflict with as many things as possible. Maybe in the States, they probably, you know, maybe they hesitate just because they're going up against college football. But, you know, certainly I think it would help the sport if, you know, not everything was on at the same time.
I agree. I touched on the LPGA there and some good news for them. The British Open is a go for the ladies this year at Royal Troon, which is really exciting because, you know, as you and I have talked about it, it's our favorite when we go over the British Open and get to watch that and something different. And I've been missing a lot of the Lynx golf from not seeing the European tour going on. So I can't wait for that. I talked to a few caddies. They're excited, you know, their whole season's been gone. These guys are, you know, they're working odd jobs, putting up drywall. Like, LPGA caddies don't make a lot of money. So that's one that they're all very excited to get back. And I know, you know, anytime you get to see Royal Troon, let's get that going.
Yeah, it's nice to see a classic golf course like that, and it'll certainly be great for the women to come back, have a you know, a good prize event as well. That's August 20th, 23rd. There's not going to be any spectators at this event, as we said. You know, it's not really a big concern that way. No qualifiers, so it's going to be a list of exemptions that they'll put out for that. The RNA will, and currently it appears they're working on a quarantine exemption so that the athletes won't have to go in and quarantine in the UK. So if that's the case, then that'll make it much easier for the players to go rather than just having a isolated group of players that are there. But certainly it'd be nice to have that first women's major of the year just you know, a month and a half away.
Yeah, just around the corner. You did mention no qualifiers. We talked about that in the past with the U.S. Open having no qualifiers, the U.S. Amateurs another one, and you and I were lucky to play with one of your students this weekend, as we touched on off the top, who is playing the U.S. Amateur this year, one of the only qualifiers that I know that got into the U.S. Amateur, in Noah Steele. And I think he's ready, to say the least. smooth 66 with two lip out eagles. It looked way too easy. That was not the same game I'm playing.
Yeah, lucky to be a part of that team along with a number of other coaches, Derek McDonald, John Graham, Derek Ingram from the national team as well. But great to see him get in that. That's a great opportunity for him at 22. That'll be his first time playing the U.S. Amateur. So that'll be at Bandon Dunes, the start of August. He's currently ranked, I think, 199 in the world, which allowed him to get that exemption in top 225 outside of other exemption categories, got him into that. And so certainly, yeah, his game looks great. Just did a Team Canada mini camp up at TPC Toronto Osprey Valley. Just bombing it off the tee. And not just bombing it off the tee. And I mean, we go back talking about yardages and distance or whatever. Accuracy was the cool part. Difference we're not talking about... Yeah, we're not talking about hitting sides of fairways. We're talking about hitting middle of fairways and getting it out there. And you know, he's just part of a new generation of golfers that are working harder and harder to, you know, not only gain speed, but also have control of their technique as well and to make sure that those golf balls are in play. This is not about just having a long drive swing and getting out there and swinging as fast as you can. So nice to see a Canadian in the field for that. Just waiting to hear if there's a couple other Canadians that are possibly exempt for that, if they will take up the opportunity to go down, and for the same as well for some of the other USGA events, for the senior women's open as well, and for the US women's open, as far as exemptions for Canadians into that.
Well, speaking of Canadians, Canada's rejoicing because hockey's coming back soon. It was just announced that both Toronto and Edmonton will be host cities for the return of the NHL. which I'm excited for. It's going to be weird watching hockey in August, but I can't wait. You know, it's been a weird break. We got to wrap up this season. And who better to talk about that than Sean McKenzie? You may know him as the son of Bob McKenzie from TSN, and Sean's a host and hockey reporter for Sportsnet that you can probably watch anytime you throw on a hockey game. So the reason we have Sean on this week is this guy's been playing a ton of golf and been playing some really good golf. So looking to break down how he, you know, found love for the game of golf and what he thinks about the upcoming wrap-up to the NHL season. So without further ado, Sean McKenzie.
This episode is brought to you by Adidas and the all-new Code Chaos footwear. Chaos lives here, so you must expect the unexpected and harness chaos. Break free of tradition and drive yourself. Inspire your game with the high-performance design of the Tour Performance Spikeless Adidas Code Chaos golf shoes. Every step is light and energized, each swing secure and confident. Experience Chaos Traction and Twist Grip Hybrid Spikeless Outsole. Chaos is here. Visit adidas.ca to learn more about the all-new Code Chaos footwear.
All right, folks, we'd like to welcome to the podcast host and hockey reporter for Sportsnet, Sean McKenzie, and most importantly, avid golfer, which is why he agreed to come on the podcast, not because he wanted to talk hockey, but we might talk a little bit of hockey. Sean, how's it going today, bud?
No, it's awesome. Thanks for having me on. You're right. Like, I talk enough hockey, and obviously, you know, right now I could go for talking a little bit more hockey if there's actually games going on, but I'll talk golf any day of the week.
Yeah, why don't we talk golf, and then maybe we'll wrap up with some hockey, because I assume you're going to be back in Toronto when the season returns, and we were trying to figure out when that is, but we'll get to that in a bit. We had Duffy on a few weeks ago, and he said you guys have been playing a lot of golf together, and you've kind of lapped him. You guys used to be more even. Is it just the timing of COVID that you've just had a lot of time to work on your game, or has this been something you've been working on over the last couple of years?
And that might be a little nice lapping him. It's, I don't, you know, there's still days where he beats me and there's still days where I blow up, but no, it's more so the truth is I played a ton growing up. Like, I played a lot as a junior and had memberships growing up, and then kind of like most people got into the real world and kind of let the hobby slide away. You know, so much time and so much money. And, you know, as anyone knows, it's a 4 or 5 hour commitment. And then I kind of moved to Winnipeg with Sportsnet. I was there for not very long, 3 months, and then moved to Ottawa for a year, and then moved back to Toronto and was living downtown. So somewhere leading up to that, and then, you know, the span of 5 or 6 years where I was in Winnipeg, then Ottawa, then living in a condo downtown, it just was not realistic to have clubs and find a course and travel with them. And so I kind of just would be that guy who plays in the Sportsnet tournament once a year, played, you know, another charity tournament, and just, you know, I was could always hit the ball far and kind of had it wired in me to play well, but I just never really played. So this would be my third summer really, really getting back into it. So started like 2 years ago, kind of really playing a lot, thanks to Duffy and Amber and those guys, because they included me in kind of their group that they had, and then really kind of fell in love with it again, and then kind of got serious about it and, you know, worked on things and kind of, like most people do, get bitten by the watching a million YouTube videos on swing changes and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So it's been kind of 3 years of more so just getting back in the groove of it. So it's not like I randomly, you know, just decided that I was going to take up golf and now I'm playing great. It's kind of just getting the feel back. And I'm kind of at that point where I got a lot better in 2 years, but now it's like the little minuscule bits and pieces of trying to lower the cap.
So what is the cap at right now? Let's describe your game for the listeners.
Okay. Last week I was a 5.2 index. This week I'm a 6. So that tells you how my last.
Man, I feel you on that.
Yeah. So I rely a lot on distance off the tee. If my driver is going straight, I can score well. Like, it's, you know, simple as that. I can hit it pretty far. I'll rely a lot on the distance, and I have decent, like, good enough wedge game where I can kind of stick it close and capitalize, but not quite Bryson DeChambeau level with what he's doing. But like, I rely, if I can hit it deep and hit it long and not totally, totally F up the wedges, I'll play well.
So for you, I mean, do you watch much golf as well? I mean, you know, you're in that TV environment, you know, you're maybe not watching a lot of other things, but is golf something you spend some time watching?
Oh yeah. And like I said, like, you know, I'm addicted to it. Like I'll spend like, especially cause I'm on the road so much when the season was going where like, you know, whether it's just like YouTube videos, like I'll just sit and watch, but then actual tournaments, like I love it. Like I find it so relaxing. I can just throw it in the background and kind of just let it roll. And then, you know, like golf, there's moments where it's, you know, kind of relaxing. And then all of a sudden the drama picks up and you're kind of cheering for certain guys. So yeah, I watch a ton of it. And more so like I always liked it, but the more I started playing and the more I got hooked on it, the more I'm now watching guys for little things like club selection, distance, hit, like, you know, shaping shots, like the stuff that in a million years, 5-6 years ago, I never thought I'd even care or be concerned about. Now I'm like, oh, he hit a low runner, or like, you know, how'd he hit this one? Like just the stupid little details that golfers think about.
So being a hockey reporter, we on this podcast, we often will chirp the broadcast, you know, we like, it's a lot of ads, right? And obviously yeah. It's different in hockey because hockey doesn't stop. And when it does, there's your time for a commercial break.
Yeah.
But that being said, you're in the business. What would you do if you were in charge of the golf broadcast and you know, budget really wasn't too big of a thing?
It's a very, very good question. Cause you're right. It's funny. Cause within hockey and within all sports, we always talk about how can we change, not maybe change the broadcast, but make it different and make it unique. And golf is like, hockey's a tough one because there's a lot of hockey fans out there who they want the hockey. They don't want crazy graphics or flashy things, or they don't want, you know, anything really out of the ordinary. They want to sit down, they want to watch hockey. And I think that's with a lot of golf fans, like the real purists, is don't give me a bunch of crap. Don't give me this, don't give me that. But I'm the opposite. Like, I like what the European Tour is doing, or even with their social media and stuff, like all that stuff's cool. But, you know, they're adding, you know, the win graphics and just things to help the viewer. Like, and you guys would have a better answer. Like, how long ago was Shot Tracker, thing that follows the ball, like added to actual TV broadcast? Was that's fairly recent, isn't it?
Yeah, it's only the last few years. Fox sort of brought it into their broadcast and then everybody else jumped on it because really the technology didn't really exist. So yeah, it's changed golf, and people actually now, you know, you're probably the same. If you watch a broadcast and all of a sudden you see a shot and there is no shot tracer,
yeah,
you're like, where'd the ball go?
I'm like, this is awful. I'm like, and a guy hits it and he just like picks up his tee. And obviously it's a sign he hit a good one, but like, you know, you don't see, like, and that's the coolest part of seeing these guys, like, you know, when Bubba gets to the tee and they're like, oh, look where he's aiming.
Yeah.
And then if he hits it, you know, the shot tracer, you're like, well, I saw where he's aiming, but where the hell did the ball, like, and then you see it land and you're like, cool, he hit a great shot, he's a pro. But like, when you can actually see it now, you're like, holy shit, look at that thing. So I think, like, you know, I think I'm not a smart enough guy to come up with the next thing like that to answer your question about what I would do. But I think there are a lot of things out there that, if you put into the game right now, people would go, that's stupid. I hate it. Like, it's dumb. It's awful. But then in 2 years, you're like, I can't live without it. And I think that like attracts new fans in a certain way, because how many times you go on Instagram and the clip is just like the shot tracer from a crazy shot. Like, you know, when like Gary Woodland and those guys hit the stingers and they shot trace it so low, like you get a feel for how good those guys are. So I'm not really answering your question because I'm not really giving you a specific, but I think they're, is a lot of technology, and then just miking guys up. Like Justin Thomas during that match was so funny. Like him give it, like I never knew as a fairly big golf fan, but not an avid, like I didn't know how tight he was with Tiger and that he had so many nicknames for him. And then they threw a microphone on him. And within like 5 minutes, I learned that JT's best friends with Tiger and he calls him this and he calls him that. And Tiger's kind of chirping back. Like I think more access to audio that these guys are talking about, conversations with their caddies. I love that kind of stuff. And maybe it's because I love that. But like when I'm hearing guys go like hidden eight, I'm like, why? Okay, well, because you got that slope and you got the wind and it, like just the crazy thought. Like I would listen to Bryson DeChambeau talk with his caddy for hours on end because you know they're just saying some wacky, like it's going to be hilarious.
Yeah, as a former caddy or somebody that pretends yeah. They're still a caddy myself, his caddy must have the highest, or if he doesn't, he better have the highest guaranteed rate each week to yes. come up with what he yeah. what he is, because it's actually insane. But you've mentioned Bryson twice, and to bring it back to a hockey angle, maybe you have some inside scoop here. Who do you know that's done the Bryson in hockey, where they've transformed their body that drastically from year to year, where you wouldn't see it on in hockey because all the equipment? But do you know of somebody that's done that, and maybe behind the scenes, it's more of a story than the rest? Because hockey is always about the team versus the individual.
Yeah. That's a good question. Hockey's a funny one because it's such a strange sport. Like, you know, where like you see. Who was it? Was it Gasol that just lost a ton of weight in basketball? And everyone kind of, hockey's strange because they're so, you have to be strong, but you don't really want to be heavy. And you can't really be too, like Mitch Marner, I know when he first broke into the league, we were doing a bunch of interviews with him. And he kind of said, like, I'm trying to put on like 15 pounds of muscle. Like, I'm trying to really, because he was like 150, like something really light.
Yeah, his hockey card probably said 180 too.
Yeah, well, you know, 6 foot two, 220. Everyone's 6 foot. Like, I'm 6 foot two, 220 if I played in the NHL. But, and like, to hear him talk, he kind of was like, I need to put the muscle on, but I've tried to do it in the past. And you know, this was, I don't know, 5-6 years ago, so don't quote me exactly on this, but like, you know, he couldn't push it too far because what we love about Mitch Marner and what makes him so good is like that he can be so agile and be so quick. And anytime he puts on a little too much, you lose that. So it's like that fine line in hockey because you're skating on 1-inch blades on ice where you can't really load up too much. Or you can't really lose too much. So there's probably some guys that went to the off season and got like super, super jacked or super conditioned. But I don't think it's something you would like visibly see like Bryson, because I think it would be too risky to go out on the ice 30 pounds heavier. Cause like, I know that like the big thing hockey players obsess about, I know training camps is like body fat. Like if you come in over a certain percent of body fat, like you're in trouble. Like, it's going to be an issue and it's not a high amount, but I'm sure Bryson put on a ton of muscle, but any person who studies science or that knows you can't put on muscle without fat. So I'm sure his body fat went through the roof and so did his muscle. So a hockey player can't really do that as much. So I don't think hockey players can really do that huge, huge transition. But I love how Bryson's like putting crazy weight on and like Gary Woodland and Rory are losing it. It's like this weird kind of.
It's a ideology. Science experiment for all.
Yeah. Basically it's like, you know, how can we try to play this game better or different or just kind of work whatever they have with them. But like when you think of when Eric Lind, like I think of like Bryson almost as like when Eric Lindros was playing like junior, and it was way before my time, but you see the videos where like he just was so big and overpowering everyone to the point where like he almost created a new style of play. And obviously it's two vastly different sports and two totally different ways of playing, and you know, physical versus golf and the mental. But like Eric Lindros came in and said, he's the first power forward ever. No one plays the game like this. And now everyone's saying Bryson, no one plays the game the way he does. It's kind of changed things.
What's your perspective then too, when you're watching it? I mean, do you think in your opinion, I mean, we have our opinions, we've talked about it, but do you think what Bryson is doing is going to match up to, you know, more golf courses and maybe more majors?
I don't know enough to say, because I'm not really, like when they start talking about golf courses and like this suits his game well, and it's designed by Doug Carrick, and it's designed like, and that part is a little bit inside baseball for me, like to the point where like, I just hear guys say this course suits me and don't really know why, but I see how straight he hits it. And if you're hitting the ball straight, like I think it has to work, right? Like on any hole, if it's at Augusta or if it's at TPC or if it's at, you know, Harding Park or wherever they're playing. Like, I think if you hit the ball long and straight, you're going to play it very well. And it's entertainment. And like, I think so many people get caught up in like, I hate him. I hate what he's doing. It's bad for the game. But people having that opinion, I think, is good for the game, because whether you hate him or love him, you tune in. And like, I don't understand why all these fans in different sports, like, their opinion matters. And they say, like, I hate that guy so much. He makes me so angry. But as a broadcaster, I sit there and go, this is amazing. Cause like, you're going to turn that on and you're going to cause emotion. So if you watch golf or any sport and you're sitting there without emotion, kind of bored, then you're probably not having that much fun. But if you're like feeling something, or you're rooting against them, and then your buddies are rooting for them, like, it just makes it more entertaining.
So for you, you mentioned, you know, a lot of different golf courses, and, you know, you get to travel in your profession. Have you gotten to a lot of different golf courses that maybe suit your game that you've liked over the years? Maybe tell us a little bit about maybe some road trip experience for you, as far as maybe taking the clubs with you and getting some games in on the road.
First and foremost, no course suits my game. It just depends on how I'm playing. It could be the perfect course for me, and then I'll just shank one.
You wouldn't know, right? You didn't.
I'm not good enough to know what kind of course, like 100-yard fairways and greens with out, you know, rolls off the back and front are good by me. But I don't. I'm trying to think if, because we're usually in so quick. To cities, hockey's a funny one because it's like one and done basically. Like, I know I did a little bit of baseball. I kind of do about 15 games, and I don't really cover it enough to get the rhythm. But that's when guys can really dig in. Like, there's guys that go and you're in a city for 3 to 5 days, and you're on a road trip that might last 2 weeks, and you're only in three cities, so you can pack your clubs and really kind of settle in. But hockey, it's by the time you pack up your clubs and check a bag, like, I'm all about. Basically trying to travel as light as possible. The one thing I did get to do, and this was, and to like, for me to do this kind of tells you how badly I wanted to do it, because it was at the time where I didn't even own golf clubs. I don't think it probably would have been about 9 years ago, right? When I was, I'm trying to think, I hadn't even gone to Winnipeg yet. So it was like right as when I started out at Sportsnet, I went to go cover the Canadian Little League World Series in Glace Bay, Nova Scotia. And we got a random off day. There was like a rain delay and it flooded the field and like the whole field was mud. And we were there for some random reason. Like, it was a sponsored event, so I barely had to work. It was kind of just like, go do a little story. It'll be sponsored. And I just kind of Googled amazing golf courses in Nova Scotia. And I didn't really know much about Cabot at the time. And it just popped up and I saw the pictures and was like, this is 2.5 hours from here, like, or 2 hours. I think I was in Sydney. And so I just like, rented a car, drove to the Walmart along like the way, bought like, I think I bought 24 balls because I was looking at the course going like, I'm going to need a lot of this.
You.
Yeah. I bought like a glove and I was just wearing like running shoes and I just rented clubs at the course, and I got there and it was like a rainy day and there was no one out there. And I remember just walking out there and being like, why don't I golf more? Like, this is stupid. Like I can go to places like this and play. And Cliffs wasn't even around then. And I'll never forget because it was like rainy. There was barely anyone on the course. And so I get to the first tee, and so I get these rented clubs, which are nicer than the clubs I own because I didn't even own clubs at the time. And have you guys played Lynx?
Yep.
So I think I was going off the 10th, or I think they flipped the first.
They flipped the ninth.
Yeah. Yep. So I was playing one that it didn't go, it went like to the right almost. It was kind of like, I can't remember. I don't know the exact layout, but kind of a blind tee shot. And I just basically like snap hook a driver. And I'm just like, oh, and the starter's sitting there and he's laughing, goes, you'll be fine. You'll like that. And I'm like, yeah, sure, pal. Like, whatever you say, man, I get the friendly out here. But when I start walking over the hill and my ball is like, it ran down the hill and it was like sitting like almost by the fringe. And I chipped up and putted in for birdie. And I'm like, I own this course. Like, this is great.
And the course that suited your game.
Oh, exactly. Like, I can miss. And then the next hole, I think I like lost like 6 balls because I kept hitting to the fescue and then chunking one out. And that, so that was kind of the only real road trip golf story I got. But that was one of the coolest. And I got to go back last summer and play. We played 5 rounds at Cliffs and Lynx. And that was just like best experience ever.
Yeah, Duffy mentioned that on the podcast when he was on, just that trip that you guys go out and just looks like an absolute time. And Scotty and I were trying to figure out ways to get out there this year. And obviously with everything going on, just isn't possible. Are you guys still trying to think if it's possible, if not pushing it to next year? I guess you're going to have to work. So I don't think you're
breaking my heart right now, because today would have been day two we had booked.
Oh.
We were scheduled to fly out. What's today? The 7th. We were scheduled to fly out the 5th, but Nova Scotia obviously taking it slow and being really smart, and they have everything under control, so they're not opening up their borders, I guess, to that outside of that Atlantic bubble. So good on them. They're doing the right thing, but it still hurts. Like, I'm seeing pictures and people are posting, and we missed it by just a couple weeks. So I doubt we'll get this year, just because, like you said, hockey will be starting up soon, and well, I'll be back to work. But that was like, I've never, forget about the golf even, like just like the caddies, the people, like just show, it took, sometimes golf, you go to a course and you're like, can I be on my phone? Do I have to wear a hat here? Like, I can't wear this. Or, you know, as a young guy, I'm wearing like the Nike, like the Air Max golf shoes. And I'm wearing a hat that's like, just like something like this, like a little bit different. And you get some of the older people that kind of look at you and like, that's fine, but that's not the way I kind of like it. But Cabot was like the exact opposite. It was do whatever the hell you want, kind of have fun. And that was the coolest part about it.
That's what Scotty and I love. We've been pitching that for years on this podcast, that golf doesn't need to be all stiffy and stuffy. And yeah, no. We're all about pro fun. Wear whatever you want. We had a hypothetical question on this podcast. Maybe we'll ask you a few weeks ago. It was a little bit of a would you rather. And it was, would you rather play every single round for a year without golf shoes, but you get to wear whatever you want on the top half? Or you get whatever golf shoes you want, but you got to wear cargo shorts that go to your mid-shin and a basketball jersey every single round. And that's what we're about, is that type of stuff.
I'm simply, the basketball jersey I'm fine with.
It's the cargo.
But I'm all about the short shorts. I like a nice tight fit. I got like a nice high 6-inch inseam short. So I'm going to go with whatever the other option was. That was no golf shoes, right?
No shoes. Yeah,
bare feet.
that would be nice. Like, as long as it's like a nice day, like I could walk a course barefoot, really kind of dig into the ground. My Nike, the Air Max ones, like I've had them for two, like they might as well not even be golf shoes. Like yesterday, like I blew like my ankle out. I was trying to hit a drive and like spun out of my shoes a few times. Like I should probably get real golf shoes at this point. But to answer your question, like I'm going no golf shoes, maybe a nice pair of flip-flops and a nice high pair of shorts. And like, I wear a Lululemon polo now, so it's like basically wearing a t-shirt. Like it's true. Casual.
Fair enough. For you as well, now, you know, you played recently a couple of golf courses. I was going back and forth with you a little bit while you're playing Wooden Sticks. Yep. What's your experience playing there, and what do you think of that design?
I love it. It's where I play the most out of. It's where kind of me and James play a lot, David Amber as well. And just like it, like we were talking about, it's got that feel where, you know, right now we know Greg Seaman, who's an amazing guy. Just same thing where like, you know, it's not stuffy at all. It's fun. You don't go there and get that feeling where you're kind of getting judged. And like, I love the pro, like, you know, hey, would I be a member at, you know, St. George or the National or Magna or all these places if I can afford it? Probably, yeah, like who wouldn't? But, you know, sometimes, like I said, you go to these clubs and you feel a little bit, as a young guy, kind of you're walking on eggshells. You don't have the right to do or say anything. But like, you know, Wooden Sticks, I know it's not the National or St. George. It's not, you know, top 100 in the country, I don't believe. But it's just fun, like the layout. And I know some people give it a hard time. It, you know, the holes are gimmicky or the knockoffs. But like, if you forget about that, it's just a damn fun course to play. Like, you can play it long. You can play it to 7,000 yards. You can play it from the whites. It's, I think, 6,100. It's got, you know, I got to take my buddies out there, and guys who haven't played it before love it, because all of a sudden, you know, you're on a hole where you're nice and wooded and beautiful. And the next one, you got the all the waste bunkers, and you got pop bunkers on some. So I get that some of the golf purists say, oh, it's, you know, it's gimmicky, but it's fun, right? Every time I go out there, I have a ton of fun. It's forgiving and, you know, challenging enough. So I don't know. I just, you know, if I leave a course, and like there's courses I've played 5-10 times, and I'm like, after the second or third time, I'm just bored with it. Courses that are considered top 100 or top 50, where it's, you know, back and forth, and it's long. And I get some people will be obsessed with, oh, well, it was designed this way and it has some little touch here. And like, yeah, but I just get bored playing it 4 or 5 times. I've played Wooden Sticks probably a few hundred times, and every time I keep wanting to go back there.
So their 17th hole is a replica of the 17th at TPC Sawgrass. Are you a guy who dreads that hole or welcomes that hole? Because there's a drive there where you come down from the 16th and you go to 17. You know it's coming.
Yeah.
Are you the guy that's sweating it, or are you the guy that's going, yeah, bring it to me?
That's a great question, because I've had a few different experiences there lately. So yesterday I played 36 there, and the first round I was all right, but the second round I was pretty dialed in. And I was even after 13. And so I'm still at the phase now where I've done it, you know, 6, 7, and probably 7 or 8 times where, you know, breaking 80, is still obviously the goal for me. Like every time I go out, so I've done it enough times now where, you know, it's, I'm still aiming for it, but it's not the end all be all. Like it wasn't, you know, last summer, every round I was chasing that. So there were so many times where I needed to like to par out the final two holes. And for those who haven't played, 18 is the St. Andrews shared fairway. So like if there's one hole in the course that you need to par, it's 18. But there's so many times, and I was going into, you know, I had a few blow up holes on like 13, 14. I was getting tired and I just needed to bogey bogey 17 and par 18 or vice versa. And this happened to me so many times where, and maybe I should stop thinking like that and just hit the ball. But I get up there and those are the moments I dread it, because like that 115 yard wedge will blow up my whole round. And it did that. I put one into the water and then chipped it and left it on the top deck and then had to run one down the big hill. So it's a love hate relationship where like, I love playing it because it's so fun. But that feeling when you have a great round going and you don't have a lot of strokes to give and you chunk a wedge into the water, like, oh, it drives me nuts.
Yeah. We're fans of the golf course. We're going to be out there at some point. We'll make sure we get a round in together. I think our fans would be mad if we didn't make you have to do a little bit of work today and not just talk about the golf game. So hockey's obviously returning in the next couple weeks or, you know, a month or so. What are your thoughts about the return? PGA Tour has, you know, been back for a steady amount of time. We got some positive tests that come and go. Yeah. But, you know, the positive tests on PGA Tour affect one guy, right? He's out for 2 weeks. His caddy's out for 2 weeks. And then they're back on the tour. Dylan Fratelli being a perfect example, missed the last 2 weeks. He's back on the tour this week at the Workday. Hockey would be kind of a bigger story. We're talking about the NHL playoffs. Two weeks of losing somebody is that's a series and a half. So what are your thoughts? What are your concerns about restarting the season?
My thoughts are I'm happy that we've gotten to this point because, you know, it's been a lot of work and both sides, the NHLPA and the NHL, have had to jump through a lot of hoops and just the logistics of it. Like, every week it seemed like things were going a certain way. It was two steps forward, one step back, and a player would test positive. And I think there's a lot, I think what I want people to kind of maybe grasp or understand in all these sports is that they knew the, like, you know, when it broke a couple of weeks ago that 11 NHL players had it, or they shut down Tampa's practice facility. Like, the NHL knew that was going to happen. Like, that's, and, you know, and when that happened, everyone freaked out and said, shut it down. Just, this is stupid. Well, no, the NHL the whole time knew, just like everywhere else in the world, that players were going to test positive. It's not unheard of that a certain percentage of people are getting it, and that will include NHL hockey players. But like everywhere, we're not trying to eliminate it fully because we can't. We don't have a vaccine. You're just trying to control it. And I think that's going to be the key for the NHL getting into this bubble. And I think if it's going to have success, it's the thing that scares me, I'll say, is what the MLS is going through right now, where they do all this work, then they get into the bubble and one team gets hit. Because you mentioned maybe you lose a top player or something. It's hard to imagine that a team that gets one or two guys with it won't end up with 7, 8, 9 just because they're going to be on the ice, they're going to be practicing, they're going to be on a bench together. So my fear is, you know, training camp won't be a strict bubble. And I think it was Justin Williams that said it today, that it's up to the players individually with how and who they interact with in the 2 or 3 week training camp, the days leading up to the bubble. Because if someone carries it in from outside and then it gets into the bubble, then all of a sudden it starts, you know, 9 guys on a team have it, they can't play, it starts pushing. So, you know, a long way to answer that is I'm very optimistic because we've gotten this far. It's just getting that next hurdle. I think the biggest challenge would be to get into the bubble and make sure that the guys are going to get it. There's probably going to be guys in the bubble that get it, just like there's guys in the PGA Tour that's going to get it and have gotten it. But I think getting into the bubble and making sure it doesn't spread like wildfire and take a whole team out, or, you know, God forbid, you know, cause an illness that, you know, affects a player, a coach, a staff member long-term, or has any real ill effects on someone. So I think that'll be the key, is getting through training camp, being strict with where guys go, what they do, getting into the bubble safe. And then I think once you get in, then you can kind of get a feel for, you know, are we going to get this thing up off the ground? Are we going to be able to play all the games? But I have my fingers crossed and I'm excited.
What about yourself in particular? Because you're obviously probably going to be covering it. You don't know exactly how, but assuming, you know, you go back to the same job and you're in the middle of the rink, obviously empty in this case, which I just thought about now how awkward that will look, you standing there in section 113 with no one near you. But what about yourself hopping in that bubble and that fear of, you know, you getting sick? Because, you know, I'm sure you've been very careful right now, and golf's a game where you can be super careful. But when you get in that, now you're around these, you know, 200-300 people that, yes, it's a bubble, but said it's going to happen. So what about yourself? Are you fearful for your own health?
Yeah, it's something I haven't really thought about yet, because there's, like I said, there's so many moving parts that we haven't even confirmed what media will look like, if we'll be in the bubble or what, like, and I can't even really fully answer that yet, because like I said, it's something that hasn't really been worked out. We haven't found out what it's going to look like from a media perspective. I'm sure it's, people are figuring that out way above my pay grade. So I'm just basically sitting like you guys and kind of waiting to see if we get up off the ground here. And I'm sure training camp will be doing lots of Zoom calls, lots of video calls, and whether that means, you know, doing on-camera stuff, maybe outside the rink, just as a visual backdrop, or in front of the Scotia, you know, or a Scotiabank Arena, just kind of just to give it something. But I no time soon will we be interacting with players, I don't expect. But like I said, I haven't heard anything like that. So it's not something I'm really thinking too much about. But I'm sure there'll come a time, there has to be in the next couple of weeks here, where we'll kind of find out what the media side looks like. But I have faith that, you know, whether it be Rogers and Sportsnet or the NHL, that in one way or another, we'll be involved in a way that keeps us safe, keeps the players safe, and doesn't really put anyone at risk.
That's fair. I think I'm excited for it to come back. And then lastly, before we wrap things up, I think we have to ask one question about your dad. You know, you wouldn't get through a podcast without it. Now
I'm going to slander him hard, though, just so be prepared.
Oh, that's fine. And maybe this is the easiest way to do it. Word is he's golfing for the first time consistently in his life. Yep. Why don't you describe his game? Just do that. That's how you can do it. Cause you know, you probably, you know, lived in his hockey shadows for forever, and he's a legend, and we can recognize that on this podcast, but let's bring him down a peg. Let's make him a real person like the rest of us and describe his golf game.
It's a real person's golf game. Let's put it that way. He's trying. He is the great thing about him. So I'll just tell a little story that kind of sums up his golf game a little bit. It was back when I was still kind of golfing a little bit, and I was really into it, and I probably would have been, maybe 17 or 18. I was fairly young, and he can probably tell the story better, cause I don't know the full details, but he got a call, and I believe it was from, Wayne Gretzky. And, you know, it's not even not name dropping here. It's just, it's, you know, part of the business. They obviously interact and talk a lot. And he used to hold the Gretzky golf tournament up in Collingwood. I believe it was at Skoka Bay Club and somewhere else, these really nice courses. And so I guess he phoned him and said something like, you know, we're short a, you know, they put different, it was a pro-am. They put different celebrities and in different groups. And, you know, we're short of, would he come? And he's like, I can't, I suck at golf. I haven't played, and just come on out. So he's like, hey, do you want to caddy for me? So I went out and caddied for him, which was super fun. But to sum up his golf game, it was hit the tee shot just to be there. And it usually probably went either 10, 20 feet in front or into the woods. And then it was, we'll just walk the hole together. That basically sums up his play. But he started playing, he came out once or twice with us last year, and like most people, got hooked on just kind of hanging out. Just, you know, it was me, David Amber, James Duthie, and then he would play with us. And I think he got hooked on just something. He's getting close to retirement. He's got one foot in it right now. So I think he started seeing, this is a lot of fun. Like, this is something I could do. And he knows a lot of people. He, you know, he owns a house in Florida right on a golf course. So I think he started envisioning that something he can probably do when he has more downtime. So he's taken some lessons. I played with him yesterday morning, and it was the best I've ever seen him hit the ball. So he's, and the good part about him is, even though he has a horrible round, he's not one of those golfers that gets frustrated. Like, I'm sure deep down, like we all do, he gets frustrated when it doesn't go his way, but he's not going to bang a club or go quiet, or, you know, it's just going to be him kind of having a nice day out there, and he'll just take advantage of the time. So that's the positive part about it, and it's coming along slowly but surely. He went on a par bogey streak through four holes on a couple of the hard holes that wouldn't stick. So I'll give him credit.
He was looking up senior tour events after that. Eh?
Let's not get carried away here.
Well, Sean, we really appreciate you coming on the Tee Talk podcast. We're looking forward to seeing you back in the rink, even though it doesn't sound like you have that much interest. You're just ready to keep on golfing for the rest of the summer like the rest of us. We appreciate you coming on. Hopefully we can catch up for a round sometime in the future.
Oh, absolutely. We'll get on the 17th at Wooden Sticks and have a little closest to the pin contest. I appreciate you guys having me on.
Thank you, Sean McKenzie, for joining us on the Tee Talk podcast. Clearly, this guy's obsessed with golf. I can't wait to tee it up with him at some point. Just got to get to 17 at Wooden Sticks, and then it seems like he's easy money at that point. He's good up until then.
Yeah, it seems that way. Sounds like he'd shake a little bit if there was maybe some cash on the line at 17. So, yeah, I would look forward to that. It's always great to hear, you know, those guys within the game and how they're obsessed with another sport, really. I mean, you know, they're around professional sports and professional athletes all the time, but it's another sport like golf that keeps them all obsessed.
Yeah, he had zero interest in talking hockey, but we had to bring it up. But thanks again, Sean, for joining us. Back to some golf, the Workday Championship or Workday Charity Open or Workday Classic, who knows what it's called, is taking place this week at Muirfield Village, the week before the Memorial is taking place at Muirfield Village. Now, before the Jack's tournament was going to have fans, now it's not, and the Workday is also not going to have fans, which, I mean, I think we both saw it coming. You had a poll out, I don't know, a month ago or 2 months ago at this point where I think they announced it. Like, do you actually think it's going to happen? I think 80% or something of people said no. Clearly, we got some good followers and good fans out there. They're nice and smart because that's exactly what was announced this week.
Yeah, I mean, you had to think it wasn't going to happen, and I just don't think they could risk it. Even a plan where they were going to have 8,000 spectators, you know, the situation in Ohio is not great like it is in a lot of other U.S. states, so, you know, they'll go without, and that's just fine. This is kind of a weird event. I mean, obviously, it's a one-year event. It's a replacement for the John Deere Classic that was supposed to be on, and, you know, it's taking place of that.
R.I.P. John Deere Classic.
Yeah, well, it'll be back.
What a shame that we didn't get the Rocket Mortgage followed by the John Deere. The hottest tournaments of the year back to back.
Yeah, so I mean, now we have the Workday Charity Open, yeah. Which I mean, that doesn't even sound like a, I don't know, whatever tour event, but anyways, it'll be interesting. A lot of guys taking this week off a little bit before the Memorial after playing a number of weeks in a row. We will have a few stars and stuff out there. I think Justin Thomas, Koepka, Jason Day are playing together. Cantlie, Mickelson, Spieth are together as far as feature groups on day one and two. Wolf is back. Maybe he's got a chance to make up for the loss last week. He's going to be playing with Fowler and Reed. And the other feature group this week is going to be Victor Hovland, John Rahm, and Gary Woodland.
Speaking of Fowler there, it's crazy to think that Bryson's passed him in wins in his career already.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I caught you off guard there, right? Like, Fowler is just always, he's always in the mix. He's always on TV. He's that name. He's a marketable face. He's got a great game. You know, that he had that run in majors where I think he finished second or third in, you know, all four. He just never really got over that hump. He's 30. This is kind of the next 5 years where you're probably in your prime, and this is where you got to get a lot of the wins done. And Bryson just passed him this week and clearly caught you off guard. You didn't even think about
it. Yeah. No, I didn't really think about it. I mean, I know he's coming into this week 84th in the FedEx Cup. Not that you can judge everything by that, but, you know, I know he's been doing some work with John Tillery on his golf swing in the offseason. But certainly, you know, if anybody's going to talk about a player that probably hasn't reached his potential or underperformed, Fowler is certainly that guy right now. He needs to get some things done in a hurry here if he's going to actually cement his legacy beyond just endorsements.
Yeah, I mean, I also wonder if he just doesn't really care that much. He's made a lot of money. He just has fun. He's always been the guy that looks like he has fun out there. And
Maybe that's all that really matters to him. Another name that popped up there, Jason Day. I saw a stat for the first time ever since 2010 or something along those lines, outside the top 60 in the world rankings, which just kind of shows how big of a part injuries took on this guy's career. Because, you know, for a long time, easily the best player out there, and was number one in the world for a long time. He won that PGA championship outside of the top 60. And, you know, I wonder if he'll ever get back to the form that we were used to. And this is kind of the longest stretch I even remember him being healthy.
Yeah, and I mean, last four starts, only one cut made, and that was only a T46 of the Travelers. You're right, down to 63rd, I guess, in the world right now, which you would have thought, you know, that's unfathomable. If, you know, just a couple of years ago, you're thinking this guy's going to be in the top 10 for, you know, the next 10, 15 years. But, you know, golf is fleeting. And the other side of it, too, is that, you know, you can't play defense in golf. You might not be playing well, but other guys are actually gaining on you as well and doing things really great. And that's why we see faces start to come up in the game when other players are not, you know, sort of maintaining themselves, I guess, or injured, or, you know, not playing well. So nobody's going to wait for you. Not in golf. They're all a bunch of mercenaries. They're all playing for their own paychecks. And certainly, you know, you're going to have to get on your horse and get going if you want to stay on the top of the game.
Yeah, 100%. I think, though, looking at that group, we talked about that future group, I think where they missed was Jason Day. I would have rather seen Justin Thomas, Brooks Koepka, and Chase Koepka, who's finally getting that Monday qualifier he got from a couple weeks ago when he got in. Obviously, it was around Brooks and Brooks's caddy, who his caddy tested positive for COVID. And then he, you know, withdrew, even though he had negative tests, just to, you never know, right? Maybe it's just late and, you know, to protect the field. And Workday, obviously, gave him a sponsor's invite, which was awesome to see. Would have loved to see him in a feature group with his brother. And you know, Chase is a player too. I know Brooks, like, everyone's, you know, on Brooks for obvious reason, but Chase belongs out there. He's got status, very minimal status on the PGA Tour, but he's got status and gotten in because he's got game. He's not just Brooks's brother.
No, and I think because he has that last name, though, I think he'll certainly get his attention, even though he's not in it. You know, he's not in one of these feature groups because of that exemption that he got. And then that story, the fact that, you know, he got in that Monday qualifier and then went through, I think he'll become one of the storylines this week, because I don't think there's going to be a lot of storylines coming out of this. You know, a lot of it will be preparation for Muirfield the next week, you know, being on the same golf course. There'll be a lot of discussion about that to fill it. Obviously, a certain player that won last week is not in the field, so he's not going to be getting the attention as well. So I can certainly see a lot of Chase Koepka, a lot of Brooks Koepka, kind of little, you know, maybe little pieces and stuff on the two of them maybe coming up in the game.
The biggest miss, though, of the week, and this should not surprise you that the PGA Tour missed this. They didn't even see this shot. They didn't even see this window. It was right in front of them, and they decided to chip out sideways. Was Phil Mickelson should 155,000,000% be paired up with Matthew Fitzpatrick this week, because Jim Bones McKay is back on the PGA Tour as a caddy for 1 week only. But for 1 week, Phil's longtime caddy for how many years? Like 41 victory, 25 years.
Yep.
Pair him with Matthew Fitzpatrick. Make them be beside each other, walking. That would be such great entertainment. We don't need Patrick Cantlay. He's great. He's slow. Nobody cares about Patrick Cantlay. Give me Matthew Fitzpatrick and Bones. Don't even give me, just have Bones mic'd up. I don't even need Matt out there. This was such a miss. What were they thinking?
You're right. I think they should actually give Bones a mic, and not just mic him up, but actually have him commentating during it.
Well, he's
and maybe
gonna, like, yeah, if, why if he not? Misses the cut, you know, he's sticking around. He's gonna. Oh, but go ahead. Sorry. Okay, I'm so rattled by this. It was like I'm excited for Bones to come back. One of the best caddies to listen to out there. He's been, you know, he retired to those knee injuries, and who knows what else. He should have been with Phil in this group. What?
Yeah, I think you're right. It's probably a missed opportunity. Who knows? They might get paired anyways during the, maybe on the weekend or something like that. But yeah, it's good to see Bones back out there, even if it's only only for a short time, taking place of Billy Foster, who's hanging out over in the UK. And, you know, we haven't seen Bones on a golf bag since 2018. He subbed in when Justin Thomas's caddy got hurt. But I'm sure that will be one of the storylines as well. There certainly will be a lot of cameras on him. And, you know what, Matthew Fitzpatrick's a fine player, but he has not won yet on the PGA Tour. And that's a lot of people are speculating that maybe having somebody like Bones could help out, given that he's got a lot of experience at Muirfield Village. Not that Billy Foster wouldn't be able to help him out there, but who knows what a caddy change could do for Matt Fitzpatrick this week and the next week after.
I just wonder if it gets Bones that itch again to go back out. I don't know. He did it for a long time. I don't know, but, you know, a win could change some things. And in a dream world, what I like to see is Brooks and Chase, you know, somehow paired together in a final, like late on Sunday together, and give me Matt and Phil right in there as well. And I think that'll be the content that we're looking for going into next week. That's for sure.
I think Bones is just, he's probably bored. He's been at home. He hasn't worked since the Players Championship. He probably just wants to get out and get around the tour and be around it. I know, I guess the deal was that the CEO of Workday reached out to him and said Matt Fitzpatrick was looking for a caddy. And then he jumped on the opportunity because, you know, again, it's the caravan out there. Everybody gets out there, the circus, they get used to it. They like to be around it. And he was around it, obviously, when he's broadcasting. He still gets to be the feel of that without having to do, you know, some different work as far as carrying the bag and doing the yardages and everything else. I think maybe it'll just last for the couple weeks and then he'll take his microphone back.
Maybe. No CEO has called me yet to have me fill in anyone's bag, letting them all know I'm very much available. Well, that's it for that. But we do have a new game to debut. It's another just multiple choice game, but it sounds like Scott's flipping it. I ran Would You Rather a few weeks back. We didn't play a game last week, I don't think. What do we have this week, Scott?
Yeah, so I was just digging through some, you know, kind of some odd random facts and things about certain players. And I thought, we'll play the Guess Who game with you. Just got to basically five questions here, certain things or certain notes about different players. And you're going to have a multiple choice, going to give you three players, and you got to choose which of these statements applies to them. So how's that?
Cool, let's do it.
All right. Recorded a 40-yard drive at age 2 and had his first ace at age 9. And your options are Sergio, Rory, or Tiger.
I know this one just from the first thing of hitting that 40-yard drive at age 2. That kept in my head. One day my future child, that is the only thing they will be doing, is trying to hit it more than 40 yards. This is Rory McIlroy, final answer.
Final answer is right. So your child's going to be trying to hit it 41 yards.
41. Is that the game? Yeah, right. I'm going to name him Rory too. Guy okay. Or girl.
Well, all right. You're one for five there. All right. Major winner once worked at a driving range where he could also eat and sleep, and he learned the game from watching videos. So is it Rich Beem, Y.E. Yang, or Henrik Stenson? Yeah. Imagine that too, a driving range where you could sleep and eat.
See, that's where I think you've given it away. I'm not sure. I don't know this answer, but this seems right up Rich Beem's alley. The fact that Rich Beem's won a major might be, there's people listening to this podcast like, who's Rich Beem? And they're like Googling this guy. One of my favorite characters in the game. It seems up his alley to be eating and sleeping and golfing all in one place. Doesn't have to move around a lot. Rich Beem, final answer.
Unfortunately, the former cell phone salesman from Texas is not the winner. It's Y.E. Yang here. Rich Beem, great guy. Certainly we'll probably get him on the podcast at some time, but he was not the guy. It certainly sounds like something he would do. You're right. Eat and sleep at the range and do whatever. But in this case, it's Y.E. Yang. All right, on to number three here. His father is the former commissioner of the Sunshine Tour. So obviously familiar with the Sunshine Tour, it's South Africa. So we're going to give you three South African players, and you can make a guess which one, whose dad was the commissioner of the Sunshine Tour at one point. Ernie Els, David Frost, or Trevor Immelman?
Is this a trick question? Is Trevor? Maybe. I thought Trevor Immelman was Australian. Is he not?
Wow.
He's not. Okay. I legit thought he was Australian.
Well, there goes that arrangement to have him on the podcast.
Trevor, I apologize. Do Australians and South Africans not get along? I'm going to go with David Frost. I have no reason other than it's not Australian Trevor Immelman. There's my guess.
Yeah, they don't necessarily get along on the rugby pitch, but in this case, it actually is Trevor Immelman. So sorry, Trevor. I know we chatted at the PGA show this year and you said you're going to come on the podcast at some point, but yeah, we apologize in advance. All right, and on to the next one here. All right, going to do a couple of LPGA ones to wrap up because we haven't talked as enough about the LPGA in the last little while and the LET as well. She won on both the LPGA and the LET, the Ladies European Tour, when she was 16 years old. And your options are Lydia Ko, Lexi Thompson, or NB Park.
Lydia was just on fire at such a young age. I mean, so was Lexi. All three of these ladies are probably way younger than anybody thinks they are. It's a problem. I'm going to go with my gut, Lydia Ko, final answer.
Lexi Thompson is the answer there. So Lydia Ko, obviously she could have. She did win a professional tournament at age 14. But Lexi Thompson obviously was a fine young player early on as well, as was NB Park, which is partly why I had the three players in there to make this a little trickier for you. All right, last one here. She's in the top five of the all-time LPGA money list at just under $15 million earned, but she only played 175 career starts so far. Maybe she'll play more, who knows. The others actually played a 303, 490, 548, and 265, so she played very little compared to the other players. Your choices are Siri Pack, Stacey Lewis, and Lorena Ochoa.
See, I feel like you're throwing me off that so far comment. But they're all kind of retired, right? Like, none of them are really actively playing too much. I'm going Lorena. Final answer.
Nice. There you go. You're 2 for 5. Yes. Not bad this week. Those are tough ones. And certainly some of them are not in your era as well. So apologies on that one. But yeah, not too bad.
All right. That's a fun game. Hopefully people at home listening did better than I did. One thing's for certain, though. I always nail the mailbag. And that is next, folks. Just after the break, we'll hit the mailbag and the tip of the week.
This episode is brought to you by Adidas and the all-new Code Chaos footwear. Chaos lives here, so you must expect the unexpected and harness chaos. Break free of tradition and drive yourself. Inspire your game with the high-performance design of the Tour Performance Spikeless Adidas Code Chaos golf shoes. Every step is light and energized, each swing secure and confident. Experience Chaos Traction and Twist Grip Hybrid Spikeless Outsole. Chaos is here. Visit adidas.ca to learn more about the all-new Code Chaos footwear.
All right, everybody, welcome back. One of your favorite segments. The mailbag was open this week for a very short period of time. We got a lot of great questions in here, so let's get right to it right away. Can the average amateur do what Bryson is doing on tour yardage-wise? Obviously, we knew there was going to be some questions regarding Bryson, but what are your thoughts as far as the average amateur trying to do what Bryson is doing yardage-wise, not eating-wise?
No, because the average person on the PGA Tour can't do what he's doing yardage-wise. Right, there's a reason he's hitting it further than everyone. There's a reason he broke records. You know, we have friends on this podcast that have been out on the tour. Like Martin Trainer hit one 365 this week. You know, pound for pound, long, just as long as anyone, and he's not hitting a 350 on average and never will. And it's so like to assume that the best players in the world on average can't do it. The average amateur can't do it now. Could the average amateur gain a bunch of weight and probably get more distance out of it if they're doing it right and actually working with a coach? Maybe. Maybe there is this science of mass and force and all this nonsense. I don't know. Have I tried it yet? Unless beer gives me strength, I don't think so. But so the answer from my perspective is a very quick no.
Yeah, I mean, they can certainly do some things to gain yardage, but I think a lot of average players have a lot bigger problems to deal with versus just gaining yardage to start with. So I think this is maybe a question of somebody thinking maybe just gaining a little bit of yardage on their own. But, you know, Bryson has done it fairly scientifically, working with a lot of staff and trainers. This is his job. And unfortunately, most amateurs, it's not your job. And chances are, you know, no offense, but chances are you don't go and practice, really practice on the driving range. You maybe swat a few balls every now and then, or not working that hard on your game. So to think that all of a sudden, you know, you could get this massive burst of distance, I highly doubt it. All right, on to the next one here. This one was kind of funny. Ended up in a weird conversation, and former guest, Brad Fritch, I'll out him here. He texts me on Sunday morning and says, "Why do golfers buy the golf club that they buy?" Which I thought that was kind of an interesting way to get prepared for a tournament qualifier that was happening the next day.
Do you vet these people before they send in questions? Like, I get it, it's Brad Fritch, but like, they buy the glove they buy because it fits, Brad.
Ooh, maybe.
Why? Like, what?
We ended up in a discussion about this, and
how much more? I don't have anything else to add. So how did you have a discussion about this?
Well, Brad's a pretty smart guy.
He asked you about how you choose a glove.
I don't know. Maybe there was an argument with his buddies or something. I don't know. But, you know, in the end, I basically told him from my retail experience or whatever, one factor people look at is price more than anything. They're like, all right, what's cheap? What can I get? You know, it doesn't matter what it feels like. I'll just throw it on my hand. And the better players have a tendency to look at fit. And I'll tell a funny story. I actually had a guy at a retail store when I had the store back in the day. He actually came in one time, tried on gloves for about 2 hours. Trying to get a perfect fit because he was very particular, left, had lunch, came back, tried on gloves again, and then eventually bought one. So, yeah.
If the glove don't fit, you can't acquit. I think that was the old OJ line. Just find a glove that fits. If you actually want me to get a little bit particular, I find the like high-end gloves, the nice leather gloves actually create blisters for me in between my fingers on my other hand, my bottom hand. So I actually have to go like a step down to the cheaper leather at the start of the year. In the summer, I find the higher leather a little bit better. But for me, it's like, does it fit? Sure, let's throw it on. And if it is not crunchy anymore, then I'll still wear it.
That was actually part of the discussion. We were actually saying when you get some of the super high-end, super thin gloves, they don't last that long. They don't, you know, at all. So they might feel good right away from the start, but not much durability as well. So,
well, I got a question for you. Like, how often, like, are you a one glove full round? Like when we played on Saturday, I don't know, you probably didn't even notice, I wore three different gloves because like after nine, like the one just full sweat, I can feel it in my palm. Do you switch often?
Yeah, I do. Actually, you probably didn't notice me doing that as well. I probably have about 4 to 5 in my bag the whole time. Especially right now, the time of the year when it's so humid or whatever, it just doesn't feel comfortable at all. And then other times, obviously, you get in situations where, you know, you get rain or stuff like that. But I usually have multiples in the bag and switch back and forth in between. I don't just have one in there and wear it to death. All right, another question here related to Bryson. I think we talked about this a little bit already, but you know, we can talk about it in particular if we want. But how will Bryson match up with Augusta National this year? What are your thoughts on that one?
From a driving perspective, should be fine. I don't see how he couldn't, you know, like the distance he's playing, he's turning, you know, he's hitting every par five and two, assuming, I mean, they're not long par fives anyway. So right then you're turning a par 72 into a 68. So that helps, right? Like that's going to change. Like that's Augusta in a nutshell. You got to take advantage of every single par five every time you play it. Like, If you're not 3-4 under almost minimum every day on those par fives, you're already behind. But said for me, it's the chipping. And I mean, his putting is clearly doing all right, even though he looks like the Tin Man out there. It works. It's the chipping around Augusta. And I've never been on the grounds, but that's what really separates, you know, a guy from, you know, winning or top 10-ing or to missing the cut is just getting it up and down from those really tricky lies. And I just don't see how you do that with a 6-iron length wedge when it's that touchy.
Yeah, I agree. The you know, his putting touch has obviously been pretty good, as we talked about early in the show. But driving wise, you know what? Even if he's wayward a bit, it's not going to hurt him. Augusta National's pretty manicured, especially in the woods. You know, you can always pitch out. There's lots of places you can do that. It's not like you're going to, you know, go OB and lose a lot of balls or anything that way. There's a couple holes that might happen, but you know, I would be fearful as far as how his performance is going to be in those touch shots around the greens. You know, those approaches. You know, he's got to be doing better with those wedges, especially on those surfaces, because it's not about just hitting the green. It's the part of the green that you have to hit to make the ball end up in a certain location where you can have a reasonable putt.
The thing that we also haven't even talked about, I don't think people are thinking of, we're seeing Augusta National at a time we've never seen it too. This is going to be a different golf course than you used to. What you're going to see in November and then what you're going to see in April are going to be very different, and you might have a leaderboard in November that looks way different in April for reasons of that golf course just not even being the same. So it's I wouldn't even look at past performance there for anybody, because this could completely change in November. That's one of the things I'm most excited about. Give me some interest. The leaves changing, you know, all that stuff. It'll be a little bit colder. Who knows? Maybe those par fives are going to be a little bit tougher to get to in November. I doubt it, but who knows? I think it's of the courses, it's probably going to be his toughest test for Bryson.
He might be worn out by then. Who knows? I mean, might be, you know, dead, we don't yeah, we don't know what this is doing. Is it
has
his
anyone
body
drank 8 protein shakes a day and not pooped themselves to death? Like I don't know if you saw that. He was like commenting, my stool is fine on a PGA. Like, I don't know about you. If I'm drinking protein shakes, oh, it's not good. So who knows? Hopefully Bryson's okay. Like, gaining that much weight that quickly and now running a full tour schedule, an injury could easily pop up. So good call out there.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on out of Bryson. I'm sure there's going to be a lot more talk about him in the next few weeks. But why is the rough so playable on the PGA Tour while I can barely play out of mine at my home course? That's an interesting one.
It's not. You're just not as good as they are. Like, I hate to break that to you. Like, I've seen balls buried in the rough, and I'm like, oh yeah, this is a pitch out. No, they hit it on the green. The rough at your course, I don't know where your course is. I'm going to assume if it's anywhere around here, you know, and you're paying to play there, the rough isn't super thick to the point where it's hurting you. But, you know, when you get around the greens on a PGA Tour event, you're not getting a fluffy lie that makes it for an easy up and down. These guys are just that good. So I don't think that. Now, that being said, when they're way off in the rough, when there's fans there, it's non-existent at that point. It's trampled down. You know, carts have been running all over it. It's way different than what you would see at your course, where that's usually where nobody really is. So that's the only difference. But it's really not. They're just that good.
Yeah, I mean, skill has definitely got a part to do with it. A lot more club head speed for those players. They're able to get it out of there. The other side of it, too, for the standard PGA Tour event, you know, they're pretty much grooming their rough to about 4 inches pretty much across the board for most of the layouts that are not majors. So it's kind of got a sort of standard feel to it. And whether that's dry or wet really depends on, you know, what's happening that week. So I think it's probably just a little bit more random at their home course, and the player just doesn't have as much club head speed as these players and the ability to actually play that shot. All right, last one here for the week. Who is the best female golf pro that we aren't paying attention to yet? Obviously, that is more related to not yet, based on the fact that obviously once the tour is back, let's just say, probably.
Let's not even go that direction, Scott. Let's go in the direction of, they asked the question of female golf pro, not professional golfer. You're in the PGA. Let's give a shout out to some of our favorite golf professionals around Canada that we should be looking out for, whether, you know, for lessons or doing something different from a teaching perspective. I think we don't talk about the actual golf professionals out there in the game that we need to give some more credit to. So language is important. You asked the question that way, so I'm going to call an audible here and make the pro give a shout out to his professionals.
I like that. I mean, that's a good way to go at it. So, you know, if we look at one of our past guests here, Casey Ward, who's the director of instruction at Credit Valley, super fine player, played in the inaugural PGA Cup last year. Rebecca Lee Bentham is returning back to tour and playing. She's a fine member of the PGA of Canada. Lori Kane is actually a member of the PGA of Canada, believe it or not. But another one as well is Christine Wong, who's actually playing out a lot on the Vancouver Golf Tour right now, who just the other week shot 64 in the final round of one of the events. So there's a lot of very talented PGA of Canada club professionals that happen to be female and are playing great. And certainly you're right. They do need attention just as much as the touring professionals do.
I also said at the end of that professional or something like that. I don't know if you picked up on that. I
ignored it.
Yeah, I apologize for that. That was interesting English. But that's great. Great shout out to some amazing women in the game of golf. And, you know, I've seen there was some recent women named head professionals at various prestige golf courses around. And that's something, you know, we talk about a lot is let's make this game more inclusive. That includes women, people of color, all across the board, and let's give them the credit that they deserve. So thank you for sharing those names. If you're in those areas, go get a lesson from them because they know what they're doing. Clear 64 on the Vancouver Golf Tour. Wow, my. But speaking of golf professionals and former professional golfers, we have our own coach here that's here as per usual to give you the tip of the week before we wrap it up. So Scotty, here's your chance.
All right. Tip of the week this week, we're going to talk a little bit about commitment to the process, not the score. Most people are really obsessed with their score. And as you saw, Stefan, this week when we were playing with Noah Steele, you saw him with his notebook out, his yardage book out. He wasn't really paying attention so much to his score. Basically, what happened is he really gets into the game, looking at the individual shots, what the results are for them, how they relate to what his goals are and what he's trying to do. And he lets them add up to what the final score is. So the big thing for a lot of people is that they can get involved with the process and not think about what the end result is by doing that. Take notes on your yardages, the clubs that you hit, proximity to the hole, whether you short side yourself or not, just to see what your tendencies are. It'll change your focus away from thinking about the score all the time to the individual shot that you're making. Count it up at the end. Chances are you'll perform better that way. You'll also have some valuable feedback to look at with your coach and to work on and improve your game. And you realize that you don't have to get emotionally attached to the score. Just get attached to what you're doing in the process of the shots, and you'll generally play better.
I like that. I got to do that. I actually have a yardage book for my course, so maybe I'll start making notes and caddying myself around. Don't hit it here, hit it over here. You know, maybe that'll be better. I don't need to pay attention to the score. I need to do something different, but or maybe I'll learn how to actually read a yardage book and get to carry somebody else's bag again one day. I mean, everyone can dream, right, Scott?
There you go. You never know.
You never know. All right, folks, that's it for the podcast. Thank you again to Sean McKenzie for joining us. We can't wait for the NHL to come back. We can't wait to get around to golfing with you at some point, too. So we really appreciate you coming on. But before we go, we only have 20 spots left at the Flagstick Open. 20 spots. So
not
if you
even.
Want,
not even.
Uh-oh. We had 20 at the start of the day. Were we down to like 15?
I think we're down to 17 now at this point. So, yeah, we're getting down to brass tacks here. So, yeah, you definitely got to get your name in.
If you've thought about signing up, now's the time to sign up. So go to flagstickopen.com, sign up. $200. So $200. What does $200 get you? Gets you two rounds of golf at a great, great golf course at Equino Golf Club up in Kempville. That alone is probably fine. But no, we're not done there. You're going to walk out. You can tee off on the first hole in your brand new pair of Adidas shoes. On the first hole, if you wanted to, right? Like, we're going to give you the box before you tee off. That's right, Scotty.
Yeah, we've got lots of goodies for all the players. We got backpacks, golf balls.
You could wear your backpack.
Hats. Yeah.
You could wear your hat. And then you could tee up the ball. We're giving it.
Sure.
You get balls to play in the tournament, too.
Yeah, everybody gets that for playing the event. Thanks to our great sponsors in Adidas Canada and TaylorMade Canada. Two rounds of golf. You're going to get a meal in there. Get your practice balls each day. Great competitive environment. We have players coming in from all over the place. We'll treat you like kings. We have great rules officials there. It's just a really fun environment, and it's nice to see a lot of new faces coming into the tournament. Hopefully, we don't see you, teeing it up in the drop area this year. Who would do that? And certainly, if you want to get in the tournament, jump onto flagstickopen.com and get it in there right now. August 15th to 16th at the Equinel Golf Club in Kempville, Ontario, just south of Ottawa.
And ladies, we said we'll treat you like kings. We'll treat you like kings or queens. It's up to you. It doesn't matter. We'll treat you however you want. We don't have a lot of ladies signed up, if any, right now. And we know you can come out and kick our butts just like anyone else, because I'm not even going to fathom having a chance out there. So come sign up. Everyone's welcome. We'd love to have you. Flagstick.com. Sign up. 17 spots left as of recording this podcast. Who knows when it comes out. So make sure you sign up. And hopefully next week when we do the podcast again, we'll let you know it's sold out. But that's it for this week. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Make sure you rate us on whatever platform you were listening to this podcast on. Make sure you subscribe. And make sure you check us out next week, because we'll be back with a brand new episode. So everyone, thank you for listening. We will see you next week. Lost in the ocean.